Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Biosimilar Drugs, Commercial Marketing, and FDA Approval Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On June 12, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Sandoz Inc. v. Amgen Inc., consolidated with Amgen Inc. v. Sandoz Inc. The Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act of 2009, BPCIA, provides an abbreviated pathway for obtaining Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approval of a drug that is biosimilar to an already licensed biological product. Among other things, BPCIA provisions require applicants for approval of a new biosimilar to provide the manufacturer of the already licensed product with a notice of commercial marketing and certain information about the biosimilar. Failure to comply permits the manufacturer to pursue infringement litigation against the applicant on an accelerated basis. Amgen claims to hold patents on methods of manufacturing and using filgrastim, a biologic used to stimulate the production of white blood cells, and markets one such product, Neupogen. Sandoz sought FDA approval to market a biosimilar called Zarxio. When the FDA accepted Sandoz's application for review, Sandoz notified Amgen that Sandoz intended to market Zarxio upon receipt of FDA approval. Sandoz also indicated that it would not share with Amgen the relevant application and manufacturing information as required by the BPCIA, and invited Amgen immediately to sue for infringement. Amgen did so, and further asserted claims for unlawful conduct in violation of California's unfair competition law. The basis for the latter claims was Sandoz's alleged failure to comply with the BPCIA requirements that Sandoz A. share the application and manufacturing information pertaining to Zarxio, and B. provide a notice of commercial marketing prior to obtaining FDA licensure. Amgen sought injunctive relief in federal district court to enforce both requirements against Sandoz, which counterclaimed for declaratory judgments that Amgen's patent was invalid and not infringed, and that Sandoz had not violated the BPCIA. While the litigation was pending, the FDA licensed Zarxio, and Sandoz provided Amgen with further notice of commercial marketing. The district court thereafter granted partial judgment in favor of Sandoz on its BPCIA counterclaims, dismissed Amgen's unfair competition claims with prejudice. A divided U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit affirmed in part, vacated in part, and remanded the case. The Federal Circuit held that Sandoz had not violated the BPCIA disclosure requirements and that Amgen could not pursue state law remedies to enforce the BPCIA. The court also held that an applicant may provide effective notice of commercial market only after FDA licensure, and therefore enjoined Sandoz from marketing Zarxio until 180 days passed after Sandoz's second notice. By a vote of 9-0, the Supreme Court unanimously vacated in part and reversed in part the judgment of the Federal Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion by Justice Thomas, the court held that the BPCIA's requirement on sharing application and marketing information is not enforceable by an injunction under federal law, but the Federal Circuit should determine on remand whether a state law injunction is available. The Supreme Court further held that an applicant may provide the requisite notice of commercial marketing before obtaining FDA licensure. Therefore, Sandoz fully complied with this requirement through its initial notice. The Federal Circuit erred in enjoining Sandoz from marketing Zarxio on this basis, and Amgen's state law unfair competition claim, predicated on the view that the BPCIA forbids pre-licensure notice, must fail. Justice Breyer issued a concurring opinion. And now, to discuss the case, we have Erica Leitzen, who is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Missouri School of Law.
Well, I think what I'm going to do actually is a slightly deeper dive into the provisions and the decision. So at a high level, the statute creates a mechanism for resolution of patent disputes between the pioneer and the biosimilar company. And at a very high level, what it boils down to is a private process in which the two companies identify the relevant patent. That's followed by immediate litigation on a subset of those patents, and then separately an opportunity for litigation on the rest of the patents in the final 180 days before the biosimilar company launches its product. The mechanism has, I guess, 7-8 steps that people started referring to as the patent dance shortly after the statute was enacted. And the entire thing is kicked off by one provision in, and this was all added to the Public Health Service Act, and a few provisions were put in the Patent Act, but the Public Health Service Act dance provisions are all kicked off by one provision that says that within 20 days after FDA accepts its marketing application, the biosimilar company shall provide, that's the phrasing, shall provide its application and information about its manufacturing process to the pioneer. And then the rest of the steps where the two companies identify the patents and then figure out which ones are going to be litigated when, the rest of those all flow from that initial step. The way the statute is written, it's sort of 60 days after step one and then another 60 days after step two. And shortly after the statute was enacted, the biosimilar industry, many of the same companies that make generic drugs, started to put forward the argument that they had the choice to not provide the application. And the reasoning for this was essentially that the Public Health Service Act, in addition to laying out the patent dance, said if the biosimilar company doesn't provide its application, then here's what happens. And what it said happened was only the innovator could bring suit in federal court for a declaratory judgment, which would be basically a court's declaration that its patent was infringed. In the situation where the biosimilar company did not provide its application, the biosimilar company could not go to court and seek a declaration that the patent was invalid or that it didn't infringe. It was shut out of the courtroom until it launched its product. And so the biosimilar company said, well, it seems to be giving us a choice. We can do the patent dance or we can decline to do the patent dance. And in that case, we're kind of choosing not to have this option in front of us. In this particular case, Sandoz was the biosimilar company and they decided not to provide their application. Amgen brought suit under a couple different theories, but one of them was a state court theory. It was California's unfair competition law. And one of the things they're seeking is a court order, an injunction. What they were asking for in this situation would have been a court order to enforce the obligation to provide the application. And as the case wound its way through the court, there was a second issue that also arose, which was the final step of this patent dance, which provides that the biosimilar company shall provide notice to the innovator 180 days before it launches. And the court said, and we're now talking about the final Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, the court said that notice can't be sent until the product is approved. What that meant as a practical matter is the biosimilar company had to wait. There's a 12-year data exclusivity period. It had to wait the 12 years. It would get its FDA approval, and then it would provide the notice, and then it would have to wait another 6 months while the pioneer enforced the patents that weren't part of the first wave of litigation. So the Federal Circuit said two things. It said that notice can't be sent until you have FDA approval, and it said separately that the patent dance, if you will, was optional, that the biosimilar company did not have to provide its marketing application. Both sides petitioned for review in the Supreme Court. Amgen, the pioneer, wanted review on the patent dance because they believe that it's mandatory, and Sandoz wanted review on this question of when exactly it had to send that notice that it was going to launch. Couldn't it send it 6 months before approval so that it could launch immediately upon approval? And the Supreme Court took both questions, and on the question about when the notice can be sent, the court said, well, actually, we don't think you have to wait until final approval. The statute says 180 days before launch, so any time that is at least 180 days before launch, that can be before approval. And then on the patent dance, What's very interesting about this is that when you go before the Supreme Court, you craft a question that is put to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court says, yes, we're going to review that question. And the question that Amgen asked was two-part. Part one was, does the statute require a biosimilar company to provide its application? And part two was, if it's required, do we have a remedy like the injunction? Or are we stuck with just doing a declaratory judgment for patent infringement? And when the court answered this, they rewrote the question as, and I want to get the exact phrasing because I think it is very, very telling. And this is a unanimous opinion. Justice Thomas wrote the opinion, and then there's a one paragraph concurrence from Justice Breyer. But the way Justice Thomas wrote the question was whether the requirement that an applicant provide his application and manufacturing information to the manufacturer of the biologic. So in other words, whether the requirement that the biosimilar company provide its application to the pioneer is enforceable by injunction. So I've counted, he uses the word required or requirement 10 times in the opinion. And then the answer is no, there's no injunction. There's no federal court injunction available to the pioneer to force the biosimilar company to provide its application. And I think that's a very narrow ruling. And I think it's telling that they said the requirement was not enforceable with a federal court injunction. The way I would interpret that is that the court is saying there's no private right of action. And most of the statutes that FDA, U.S. Food and Drug Administration, implements, the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act being the big one, have no private right of action. What that means is they have lots and lots of requirements that apply to all the companies that they regulate. But if you, a private citizen or some other company, is aggrieved by the fact that, I don't know, Sandoz didn't comply with the law or Amgen didn't comply with the law, you have no private remedy. You can't sue privately to enforce these statutes. It is FDA's to enforce. My takeaway from this is sort of twofold. It is that we have to think about now what it means exactly to say that providing the application is a requirement of the statute. I mean, there's a footnote in the opinion. Justice Thomas has a footnote where he points out that it's entirely possible a violation, he uses that word, violation of this provision, could be taken into account in a patent infringement case when the district court is deciding whether to grant preliminary relief, which is a decision, I'm going to prevent you from marketing your product while the patent case unfolds. The fact that the company had violated this provision might somewhat go to the equities here. So to me, that's a signal that the ruling is about the availability of an injunction for Amgen, and it doesn't say anything about what else might happen. And so there are a couple possibilities. I think one possibility is that the trial court could take it into account, as just mentioned. Another possibility is that FDA could enforce it. And there are a couple different things it could do. But one thing that I want to mention is that the Public Health Service Act, this provision, this section of the statute, has a criminal enforcement mechanism. All of this appears in Section 262 of the Public Health Service Act. The patent dance is subsection L. Subsection F makes it a misdemeanor to violate, the word that Justice Thomas used, any of the provisions of Section 262. So that's another possibility. And then the final question is this question about a remedy under state law. It's been remanded. California's unfair competition law makes it unfair competition to engage in an unlawful business act or practice, and that requires showing that the company acted unlawfully by violating another law. And then it has a provision that says that you can't get any remedies if the underlying law, which here would be the federal law, expressly provides its remedies are exclusive. So I think what's going to have to happen here is the federal circuit is going to have to determine whether failure to provide the application is, quote, acting unlawfully by violating the federal law. Then it's going to have to answer the second question, whether the federal law expressly says its remedies are exclusive. The answer on that one is no. But then they have to figure out the preemption question.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.